Welcome to another episode of the NPCs Discuss, where we talk about the video game industry, events, history, controversies, and more. On today's episode, what do the Xbox Series consoles, the PS5, and the last generations of consoles all have in common? It's not crossplay, and it sure isn't the exclusive count, but the chips and silicon inside the consoles themselves. These chipsets are derived from those being sold for the PC market, with AMD working in tandem with Sony and Microsoft to deliver on their hardware. With the Xbox taking things further and adding in support for keyboard and mouse, and a browser that works near one-for-one with its desktop component, we are curious. Have we reached a point where consoles and PCs will finally become one unit? Or are we still a ways off? That's what we'll talk about with this week's topic, consoles, the next home PC. We'll be right back after this message from our sponsor, Anchor.fm. And we're back. So welcome, everybody, to another episode of the NPCs Discuss. It is October 7th, 2021. My name is Travis Sherman, and of course, I am joined, as always, by Kyle Inman. Hey, Kyle.
What's up?
What is up, indeed? We have ourselves a new episode. We got a great topic here to actually go through and talk about, which actually happened to spawn from a conversation I was having with some coworkers.
Yeah, this topic actually has been on the back of my mind too for a while, but I don't know. I just feel like when you started talking about it too, I felt like, yeah, it was the right time. We had enough ammunition at this point that this was the time to talk about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that topic is consoles, the next home PC. And of course, just kind of as the intro talked about, there is that we've really hit a point in console development now that for these manufacturers to save a buck or two, at least in some form or another, that they work with a partner, especially one that is big in the CPU space, AMD, you know, specifically for PlayStation and the Xbox, working with them to make a custom version of consumer grade processors. That's basically the key thing that we've been seeing for the last two console generations now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that in and of itself says miles, but that's really just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it is the actual chips themselves are very similar to what you'd consider an APU from AMD, where it's the graphics chip as well as the actual CPU all built into one package. It's not anything separated like we have on, say, our gaming PCs right now, where the CPU is independent from the GPU and vice versa.
Right. But even so, some of the APUs that we're getting in the consoles now are even on the level of the graphics cards that we're seeing on the, you know, top of the line market right now, but they operate on the same plane. So they're taking the components of a computer and putting it in a smaller package, but it didn't start that way. And I mean, I think when we gotta look at this, I mean, you gotta kind of look back too at, you know, the start of like disc consoles, and that's where the advent really started, and it was nowhere near where we're at now. But the first one that we really started seeing this with was the Dreamcast, because it ran a Windows based operating system.
Mm-hmm. It did.
And, you know, that was a big advantage to the homebrew scene. But, you know, it also started to, you know, make that outward shift that it's not just necessarily a toy anymore. This is a console. This is a console that is a computer, or is it a computer that's a console? Where does that line get blurred?
Mm-hmm. And we even saw that especially more so with the first Xbox. The first Xbox, if I'm right, used a PowerPC CPU, which at that point in time, PowerPC CPUs were being made by IBM specifically for Apple computers. And this PowerPC CPU, of course, was, again, a custom chip, but it was modified in a way that was exclusive to the Xbox. And so it worked, of course, I think with some type of underlying Windows kernel at that point. And literally Xbox is short for Direct Xbox, which it's using DirectX technology to drive it, which is a PC graphics driver. So right there, even with the Dreamcast itself using a derivative of Windows, now you're getting into the point where drivers that are required for graphics processing are now like standard, almost near standard desktop drivers are what was being used to drive gaming consoles. It wasn't anything that was proprietary, at least in the sense that you had to go make a custom piece of firmware that was limited to this one device here, or have a chipset that was made for this one unit here that you knew that you couldn't carry forward to the next console generation. And I'm looking at you, Sony, with what happened with the PS2 to PS3, especially after that second release or the second hardware revision of the PlayStation 3, where it removed, you know, the backwards compatibility and a lot of other things too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it has definitely been, you know, it's been going on for a while, albeit slowly, but we've really seen a lot more of a push for PC-grade components to be deployed in effectively an all-in-one package that doesn't need to be set up in the same way that a computer does.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Like, I feel like in that sense, it is a computer, but it's its own entity. Like, we'll get into some of the stuff later on that specifically drives that. But, I mean, I just lost where I was going.
That's
sorry.
Okay.
I had a thing pop up on my desktop.
That ADHD hits hard sometimes. I get it.
Yeah, no, it's the stupid notifications. I need to turn those off. But... like, you look at some of the things that the consoles are capable of now, and it's basically a computer, but like almost like what Apple has done. They've made it their own environment. You know, the Xbox has its own environment, but it's capable of doing those PC things now. The PlayStation has its own environment, but it's capable of doing those PC things now. Shoot, like you were saying with the PlayStation 3. Before they locked it down, you could load a Linux kernel onto it.
Yeah, I think the U.S. Air Force was actually using a whole bank of like PlayStation 3s networked together and running a Linux kernel on them as a supercomputer.
Yeah.
So because they were using those as a supercomputer, I think that's why Sony actually locked them down in the first place, was because I think the government picked them up because it was a cheaper way to get processing capability on, you know, on this type of hardware and dedicate the resources to that than it was to work, say, with an actual server or PC vendor to get that stuff in and the service contract. That, you know, that somebody there in the Department of Defense figured it out. And I think that was what led to at least the lockdown of the PC side. But of course, then as things carry on, we also lost the backwards compatibility functionality of the PlayStation 3 as well when they removed the PlayStation 2 chipset.
Right. But going forward, I think another thing though too is, you know, the consoles, they are locked down more to the gaming features of what a PC is capable of.
We are starting
to go forward into more of those PC features, but with them also being locked down, like, it's almost like they open it up feature by feature. Like, for instance, the developer mode on Xbox, it's basically like letting you do homebrew without having to hack anything. You can do homebrew right from your Xbox, no problem.
With some limitations, of course. I mean, you're obviously not getting, like, you know, you're not getting certain system level things, but you've definitely unlocked some other areas that you wouldn't have been able to from, you know, previous generation standpoints. So yeah, absolutely, you have that.
But that almost harkens back to, like, you look at the Commodore, you know, it was a home computer, but it was a game system, you know.
Mm-hmm,
but people wrote video games on it, You know, a lot of games that came out for the console were actually written on the console because it was just an all-in-one thing, and that's how you bought it too.
Yeah, and I think the Commodore was I don't think it was a cartridge system. I think it was like a disk system that actually used those larger floppies with some sort of like external, like I think an external floppy disk bay, right?
I'm trying to remember. I think you're right. Yeah,
because I know it was big, but you think, of course, for what computers were like at that point in time, though, is that they were big, but they took up so much space anyway because of the size of the chips and that underneath. I think it did have the expansion. I know it's going off kind of onto the side, but you're absolutely right, though, is that the Commodore 64 itself did actually show at least a little bit of that bridging way early on into video game history. So you're talking at least the 80s when something like that was there. And it did open up a lot of things for people because, like, oh, I could play games. Oh, now I can go load up this spreadsheet software and work on my taxes, you know, if you're an older person anyway. Or the kids are asleep. Now I can go and do this thing on, you know, exactly. So it right. did do and that they, early they, on.
And, of course, those were a little bit more popular. And they did have other versions of those that came out that weren't Commodore that had their own runs. And I don't even remember the different models of you know, dead consoles or dead, you know, home computers that were like that. But, you know, they all did kind of similar things. Mm-hmm. And they bridged that gap very early on. And a lot of those were more in the European and Asian market. So, you know, of course, we wouldn't really know about them all that well. But
right. We did have something, though, here in the States. I mean, you look at, like, the video game crash back in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of that you could attribute even to that some form. Not necessarily just games, all these games being just that were flooding the market, but all these different consoles that were coming out at the same time, and you did have a small subset that were like the Commodore, that were that PC console hybrid.
And I think that's why we didn't see them here in the States, is because the crash hit the United States very, very hard.
Mm-hmm. It did.
I mean, you look back, the only reason we got the Nintendo Entertainment System, the original NES, was because they managed to coax stores into putting it into the toy section, not the electronics section of stores. You know, they carried them at KB Toys initially.
That's true.
It wasn't a video game thing. It was a toy. So when you really think about it, video games have come a long way from just being toys to being basically a computer now.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely true, especially in the case. But I'm glad you brought up the Commodore anyway, because that was one of those things that was kind of lingering there in my head, but, you know, solidifying that at least it was a venture early on. But it was because I think at that point in time, especially in the market, you're absolutely right. It's like they were trying to figure out exactly how to kind of put these things together in the sense where they could meet the needs of a couple different areas. The home right. computer, which, you know, for those who could afford something, they were working towards getting something like that. And then, of course, in tandem with trying to keep the kids from going to the arcade and that too, you have the video games at home, and, you know, you don't have to worry about them going out. They're just playing there. Granted, it's not the same, but in more ways than none, you know, more ways than one, excuse me, it might help out in that case. But anyway, but moving on, though, of course.
Yeah, and I think part of that, though, was the tech market back then wasn't as big as it is now. People didn't understand it as well. So things like that got confused and lost, you know, in everything.
Mm-hmm. But they did.
Yeah. Going forward, like you said.
Yeah. So let's kind of start looking ahead at to where things really got, though, as consoles did move along. So consoles were really marketed as toys more than they were electronics. Like, I could actually remember back to, like, old Sears catalogs that I would get around, like, Christmas time as a kid, mm-hmm. or my parents would get, and then they'd give to me so I could just, you know, scour through all the toys and circle what I'd hope I'd get for Christmas. And the same goes for, like, walking through KB Toys as a kid. Toys R Us being another one, though, too, is that they weren't necessarily front and center, but they were part of those toy departments for those different companies, that you'd be able to walk in and you'd be able to go and look at the action figures that are there. You'd be able to look at all the big toys that are there, you know, Legos at that point in time, of course. But then you'd also have your games there. And I think, like, if I remember right, I think my Game Boy Color came from a KB Toys when I was a kid. I think that's probably where mine came from. And you're absolutely right, is that I think the change in marketing really helped to solidify at least the way to drive sales and to get people to buy them again is by marketing them as toys. We didn't really see a big fundamental change in how things were being built in the consoles themselves until, like you said, the Dreamcast itself, which was running, I think, what was the version of Windows that it was running, or at least CE, like the kernel? CE, okay.
I believe it was CE.
Let's see, Dreamcast. I'm looking this up really quick. Dreamcast, Windows, CE. Yeah, it looks like that's what it says. Let's see, optimized version of Windows CE with DirectX of anything. Let's see.
Well, yeah. and a lot of the guys that you know, started the Xbox, they actually were playing the Dreamcast, or, you know, they moved from, you know, going and programming on the Dreamcast to let's make the Xbox, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I'm reading this here a little bit more on this history about the Dreamcast itself. And what I'm happening to see here is that it looks like it was written with a version of Windows, with which was called Windows CE with DirectX on it. However, it looks like Sega, according to this, this is from a website called SegaRetro.org. It says that Sega chose to go down a different route than what was originally planned, building simple operating systems within the discs themselves. Running games through Windows CE was still an option for developers, but most games use Sega's proprietary software instead. The limited adoption of Windows CE is often blamed on console programmers lacking the experience to deal with the OS and a lack of advantages that Windows CE offered over the competition. So we now at least have a little bit of an idea in mind, is that it didn't necessarily come packed in with Windows CE right off the bat. It was there for developer purposes, and that when the disc would be popped into the Dreamcast, it would effectively load its own operating system in some small form to be able to play the games and interact with stuff. But of course, we did have, what was it? I think the Dreamcast was the one that came with built-in like networking, like right off the bat. Like it had a dial-up port right on the back of it, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the GameCube, I know, had some type of marketing with it that it said it could connect to the internet. But I don't think the GameCube actually came with a dedicated port on it. I think it had those expansion bays on the bottom, and you had to buy the expansion.
Yeah.
Exactly. So now what we've learned, at least in the history, is that it was there with the Dreamcast, but it wasn't there necessarily in that same way. But it definitely shows that within history itself, it's like that was what was being worked on. And then, of course, Microsoft decided to take it a step further and delivered on the Xbox, which there's a whole history with the Xbox anyway, and how they tried to partner with Nintendo, and Nintendo basically laughed them out the door, so they decided to do their own thing. And sure enough, you know, here we are. But you know, it's just interesting to think of how it did begin, is that, you know, or at least more modern sense, is that it did begin in the way that it was worked on, it was developed, and it was working, but it was complex and confusing enough for the developers that they just decided to nix it and move on with something else. So I guess that's where it leads us into kind of, I guess, the start of that next generation there with the Xbox and the PlayStation. PlayStation 2 at that point, and then even the GameCube as well. I mean, at that point in time, internet connectivity and playing multiplayer games over the internet wasn't really a thing that was there, save for playing on a PC itself. You know, we did get the advent of Xbox Live with the original Xbox. PlayStation had its own thing. I think it was just called PlayStation Network at that point in time anyway, too. But then I don't remember exactly what GameCube had, but I know they had some sort of online component for a couple things. Not a lot, but a couple.
I don't think anything hit the United States, but I want to say in Japan, you could get an Opera browser, similar to the Opera browser that they eventually put on the DS. So they had kind of had that partnership, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at here, because like that's what I was thinking. It's like I knew it, and it's funny that I find this, because the picture that comes up here is the massive keyboard / GameCube controller that's like this big.
Oh yeah, it was awful.
On the side. Yeah, it's funny to look at and just think like, holy crap, is that really what that is? And, you know, it just kind of blows my mind there.
You could use that for Phantasy Star Online as well.
Yeah, that's actually what comes up here, is that, like, that was one big thing, was an MMO. Now, of course, on the Xbox side, we didn't really, I think, see anything MMO with the original Xbox. But on the PlayStation 2 side, we saw that online functionality for gaming coming into play. Like, we had SOCOM that was online. We had,
don't forget, the Resident Evil racing games.
Yeah, we had a couple of racing games. We had that. We also had Final Fantasy 11 as well that had its online component. And I know there were a bunch of other things that were there online related. But at the end of the day, it was just a bridge just to be able to get online at least. But it wasn't necessarily this full-fledged thing. It wasn't still until there. But we are starting to get closer, at least to that point now, by offering online connectivity.
But then by the time you hit the 360 and the PS3, all of a sudden consoles are capable of having video services. You're able to do video chat with consoles.
Instant messaging.
Instant messaging. Mm-hmm. But if you had the PlayStation camera, or what was the eye on the PS3 and then the 360 Kinect, you were able to do video chat if you really wanted to. It wasn't the greatest, but it was there.
Yeah, and even the 360 had a camera before the Kinect. It was a smaller, like, squarish, like, white camera that was
right.
And then it moved up to the Kinect as the next thing, because
that
was
actually for, like, Messenger or something.
Yeah, because I remember buying it, like, not the camera itself, but I bought a, like, literal Messenger bundle for my Xbox 360, which came with the snap-in keyboard that would plug right into the bottom of the controller, and then it also came with a headset, and then I think it came with 3 months of Xbox Live Gold, like, all in that one bundle, and I think you were saving some money by getting all that in one thing. But the camera itself was a separate purchase, and I think it was, like, only a 480p camera, which at that point in time, sure, that's perfectly fine. But now you're starting to kind of get into that next level of things, especially when we saw like, applications that weren't game specific really making their way to the consoles themselves. They were starting to become more of media centers. And that's a funny thing to say, especially about the Xbox 360, because you could actually buy a Windows Media Center remote that you could directly tie in with your Windows Vista install. And any music or videos that you had on your Windows Vista PC, you could connect up with your Xbox and stream through to your Xbox to watch right there. And then, of course, we had the inclusion of Netflix as one of the applications. I think it was, like, one of the very first applications that was out there that allowed you to view content on something else other than whatever you had put into it yourself. But the PlayStation 3, I never owned a PlayStation 3, so you have to forgive me on this one here. Maybe, like, you owned a PlayStation 3, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what was its media capability? Other than, of course, I know Blu-ray was its big selling point, because, of course, you could just buy this all in one. But what was, like, what
if
were some
I
of the
recall,
other things media
eventually
was?
It was capable of doing pretty much everything that the Xbox was capable of, you know? And then Sony always had, you know, their extra little things on the side, but I mean, beyond going on that generation, because I mean, it did kind of cap out at a certain point. I mean, we started getting applications similar to, like, cell phones on that generation, but then you hop up to the next generation and you see more and more applications start to hit, more media, more video chat, different things that you are just apps that don't necessarily involve gaming. And it wasn't nearly as much on the Xbox One and the PS4 generation, I felt like.
I'd call shenanigans on that one with the Xbox One, especially because they sold that thing originally when they announced it as a more of a media device, like an actual media center all-in-one, than they did a gaming console. And that's what backfired on them.
I guess,
that is true.
They technically were aiming for that.
They moved a little ahead of what they, like, what people were really expecting. And of course, you know, the Xbox One came with the HDMI in, so you could plug your set-top box into it for whatever provider you had for, you know, regular television, and then output that, of course, your TV. It had the built-in guide. But even so, it still had like a browser built into it.
Some of that innovation bit them in the ass because they tried to do too much too fast, especially when they made the announcement that, you know, once you put a disc in, it's going to basically burn your serial number on that disc and you can't ever trade it in. You can't ever share it to anybody. I mean, that's a pretty hefty step, but at that point, but you think about it now, where we're at now, that's kind of what people wanted anyway. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, with the amount that people spend in microtransactions or just buying games, you know, that are just digital only anyway, like I'm a huge guilty offender of that because, you know, I have a massive Steam library and that was, you know, it grew probably tenfold or more within, you know, a 2-year span. So,
yeah, and see, and I'm the same way.
None of those games I have physically. Yeah. They're just somewhere else on a server.
Yeah,
so.
I'm the exact same way with you, is that my Steam library is massive. I'm bound by the DRM part of it itself, that it's like I have it. It's technically on a lease more than anything, you think about it.
Right.
But, you know, I'm the exact same way. I can't transfer those anywhere else. And that's something that the PC market has already been used to for some time. You know, well, up to a point. I mean, you know, once we got to a point where digital downloads became the norm and you weren't seeing computers being sold with CD drives, DVD drives, Blu-ray drives, any type of actual disk drive itself, and everything was going to an all-digital format, it was easier, it looked like, in the sense for PC, those who were like PC gamers at that point in time during the transition, to be like, well, this is normal for us. This is what we've been doing. You know, this is what we already see going on.
And they tried that with the Xbox One and they failed.
Because of the market at that point in time. Because everybody was expecting a dedicated console that might be able to do this thing here and this thing there. But Microsoft kind of jumped a little too far ahead in that sense to properly position itself. And even so, it's like, you know, Sony took advantage of that and they sold the metric ton of PlayStation 4s. You know, they took advantage of making fun of Microsoft for that, where they released a jab at them by saying, here is how you transfer PlayStation 4 games to another person. And it was literally them handing the game box to another person. And that was it, you know, instead of any other sort of like family sharing or whatever else.
Now we're in a generation of consoles even where half of the collector's editions that come out don't even have game codes. You know, they're just crap that's extra, you know, that you could have got with a collector's edition that we would have bought 10 years ago with a game, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The extra statues and stuff. It does come with a game. Sometimes those collector's editions only come with a code because new consoles, all of a sudden, there's two different types and one of them doesn't have a disc or, you know, a disc slot. And, you know, that's PlayStation and Xbox both.
Yeah, absolutely is. It absolutely is. Like, I'm thinking like to more recently, the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, when they announced that, they released that legendary bundle where you could get the actual N7 helmet. You could get some other artwork things and stuff like that. But for the price of it, you still didn't get a copy of the game. And it's one of those things because they were emphasizing more on the digital part than they were the physical. And sure enough, you know, it's like if you wanted this cool bundle, you still had to buy the game separately. So I agree with that. Right. But that's probably a discussion for another day when it comes to bundles and stuff. Maybe. I don't know. We'll put that on the list as a topic. But we're progressing, though, still through now the generations anyway. So even when we got to a point with the Xbox One, when it finally evolved up to like the Xbox One X is what I would say, not necessarily the One S, but the One X, is we started to actually see more of an investment from Microsoft into different ways to actually play games on the console itself. And one of those ways was the introduction of keyboard and mouse support for specific titles. And I think it was, I don't think it was Fortnite. I think it was PUBG was the first officially supported keyboard and mouse game on the Xbox. Does that sound right to you, or am I thinking something else?
No, it might have been Fortnite.
You think it was
Fortnite? I know there a few early adopters of it. Halo was one, I thought. Fortnite and PUBG were pretty early adopters.
Let me see. First Xbox game with mouse and keyboard. I'm looking here. I mean, the list is pretty good right now, but I'm just like, I'm trying to see if there's any that actually just says what it is, but like, I'm not seeing anything immediately that says, here you go, you know, this is what it is, but that's okay. It could have been Fortnite. It could have been PUBG. Cause you look at that point in time with the popularity of like everything rising up with like battle royales and such. It was definitely one of them. And then Razer was the first company to actually release a dedicated keyboard and mouse that were built specifically for using on a console that, you know, it looked like a regular keyboard you'd see for your computer, but it had some other little things on it that were more in tune for interacting with a console itself, though. So, you know, we started to see a lot of that kind of bridging up. And I think that was a way to kind of introduce people to the potential of doing something like that with consoles going forward. Because what was the next console that we had come out right after that? The Xbox Series line and the PlayStation 5. Granted, it was probably about, I think after the PC support stuff dropped, I think it was about maybe a 3-year difference. But even so, you know, 3 years is enough time to gather that feedback to see exactly, okay, how many people are actually doing this? And is it worth it to continue on offering something like this?
Well, yeah, and it definitely felt like the Xbox One all digital and the Xbox Series or Xbox One X was definitely a dry run for, you know, what the current state of Microsoft's console generation looks like. And I think back then, yeah, the digital did fail. And even today, to some extent, it does, but not really, though, because I feel like it does give that home computer power, but, you know, at that less or that lower cost. And I do want to say home computer now, because all of a sudden, you know, we have all these different ties to with like Xbox Live. It's not Xbox Live anymore. It's Xbox Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And Xbox Game Pass doesn't just affect the console. It affects your computer. And the advantages, and I don't want to all of a sudden go on a soapbox and, you know, start preaching about how great it is or anything, but it does. It gives you the games for both, and it gives you some cross-play between the both. And all of a sudden, my saves from some of my games work on my PC games and vice versa. And it, you know, it all just works together.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Sony has that a little bit, just less advertised and not to the extent, which totally boggles me, because I want to say years ago they had a partnership with Steam. So I don't know what happened with that. But
well, I mean, we see how Gabe Newell and Valve handle things when it comes to actual console support stuff anyway. So that's one of those interesting areas. I mean, you know, the fact they tried to make the, you know, the Steam machines, and we saw where that went. And of course, now we've got the Steam Deck coming up here in the very near future. So it's interesting to see.
It's a handheld computer that's a console, which it once again blurs those lines, because it's a Linux-based console. You can load Windows on it. You could run around with it as a computer. I'm pretty sure you could probably use Windows on-screen keyboard just fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you really, really wanted to, but you can dock it and use it as a computer.
Right. And that's one of those things that is kind of like, it's bridging the gap by putting everything in there already into just one package itself. And those who are buying things from Valve, especially on the hardware front, completely understand exactly what this thing is capable of. But for the layman on the street who knows about Xbox and Nintendo and PlayStation, you know, they have a good understanding, at least on that part of it, but they really won't see something like the Steam Deck as something that they can get into. But it's like, okay, they play games casually, but they're not big. Like, maybe they don't even have a computer. Maybe they're doing all of their regular computing type stuff on their phone. What you start to see, though, now is that Microsoft and Sony, you know, if Sony starts to really evolve more and more with what it offers, kind of start to bridge a lot of that gap by saying, okay, well, we're going to offer you a console. Here are these extra capabilities with it, regardless if you use them or not. This is what it's very capable of. And what I find funny is that this is something that I talked about at the beginning of 2020, at the beginning of last year. And what I might do here, of course, I can't share anything, but maybe for the audience, what I'll do is I'll put in the clip of what I was talking about. They were talking about the possibility of maybe the Series X being an actual PC, but that it runs some sort of Xbox software on it that you could boot into Windows 10 and actually have a full-fledged desktop with the capability for 4K games on it, or boot into the Xbox side of it and run your Xbox 360, Xbox One, Series X games, and so on, using the exact same interface we all know and love off of the existing Xbox One. So I think that'd be one thing to differentiate it, because they're already making it out right now, especially with the Xbox One, that it's becoming more and more of a PC every day. I mean, outside of having a web browser on it, which I assume the market for using that is very, very small. I mean, I don't know how many people use Microsoft Edge on their Xbox, but they've got their keyboard and mouse support now, or at least they've had it for the last 6 months, and Razer's making official peripherals for it, so you don't just need to plug in your own keyboard and mouse. Here, you can get something that's kind of built for it, but at the same time, it looks like a PC gaming keyboard mouse setup. And so I'm kind of leaning that direction, that I'd like to see the Series X go that way to become a full-fledged PC. Okay, so that clip was probably just playing anyway. You know, we're just continuing recording, and I probably just put a pause somewhere in there. There you go, you got the clip. Anyway, so in case you fast-forward it for whatever reason, basically what I had said in 2020 there was that I see the Xbox Series X as being this sort of hybrid device that could potentially be offered in a way that partitions out the drive inside, the actual storage space inside, to be dedicated for the Xbox part of it with gaming and such on it, and the other side being a very fully functional Windows 10 machine. The underlying software on there is the Windows kernel. It's literally Windows 10. And as we've seen continued improvements and focus on the way that they're delivering on this platform, here we are now with, I mean, the introduction of their Edge Chromium browser now being on there, and its capabilities itself, though, too, by opening up access to things that aren't even on the console yet. Things that aren't even available on the console regularly.
Haven't even been on a console since the Commodore 64. By putting Windows 365 on the Edge browser, and you, all of a sudden now you can type a Word document on your Xbox, which means it's effectively become a lesser word processing unit, or maybe just a less expensive computer.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going to go to next, is that you've got Microsoft.
And it's almost like Microsoft has taken games, and all of a sudden games are just your app. You know, it's the app that you bought for your Xbox computer, or, you know, you buy for your computer, or maybe you just want to load that app on your phone.
Right, and because so many companies are moving their applications to being something that you install on your computer to being something that you just access through a browser, and you're just doing everything through the cloud, that's kind of where we see this next thing coming up. So just like you said, you've got Windows 365, which is Microsoft's virtual PC offering, which lets you spin up a Windows PC in the cloud. You've also got Office 365, which is their word processing, spreadsheet, slideshow, all that deployment stuff, all built into there. So if you wanted to type up something in Word, if you wanted to make up a spreadsheet in Excel, if you had to create a presentation for some reason, you could do it basically right then and there. And of course, with the advent of cloud technologies, being able to take it with you wherever you go. So you create something in Office 365, it's with you on your phone if you're signed into it there, it's with you on your work computer if you're signed into it there too. You know, it carries with you everywhere. And that goes the same too. You don't even have to use Microsoft's offering there either for what they're doing. You can also use the Chromium browser, the Edge Chromium browser, and go to Google Drive to and work on Google Docs, Google Sheets, all that fun stuff you can still get access to. And that goes the same for any other cloud platform. And that's why it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, coming back around to what this topic is about, is that consoles really becoming the next home PC. That I, as a parent, I've used this, of course, a lot as in our discussions of you know, all these different topics here. But as a parent, one of those things that I see is to be able to buy a single device that is capable of doing what needs to be done for school, maybe for online communication of that sort, because you can interface a webcam into an Xbox Series console. You got your keyboard and mouse there as well. That you could dedicate it as a machine that is used by your kids to do their schoolwork, their homework, maybe they're chatting with family, what have you. But at the end of it, school's done. Okay, here's the controller. You can go off and play Fortnite or play Halo or play whatever, you know, that's on there.
Right.
You know, it becomes that all-in-one machine. And it's one of those things, especially for maybe not necessarily like our generation of parents, but maybe just a little bit older in that, though, too, who don't have a firm understanding of what it means to buy a PC in this day and age, especially one that's like considered a gaming PC. It's one of those things that you can just go to a store and say, okay, I want this Xbox Series X. Tell me about what it can do. And when that salesperson pitches and explains exactly what it's capable of, that $500 is going to be an easy sale to make, you know, in tandem with, of course, maybe getting a monitor, the keyboard and mouse. Maybe you have to buy a webcam because your kid does remote learning, what have you, that they're going to be able to, you know, pull that thing right out of the box and get going instead of buying something that's a dedicated computer. You know, you've got this all-in-one box that can do all of these things with some limitations, but, you know, it's not a huge leap in like it would be with, say, you know, a regular Windows PC.
Right. But, you know, even on the other side of that, Sony, you know, they've got a bunch of their games that are first party games that are coming to PC now, because it's not even that much of a stretch for them to just translate it over, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in the era of PlayStation 3, it would have been much more difficult, because those games had to be written a special way. They had their own architecture for everything. And, you know, Sony is still probably guilty of that to some extent, I'm sure. But with you know, the technology being so close, there's no reason to not put your game on a computer, because, you know, they already have the computer, and those computers are hard to get right now. So why not put it on the computer that they already have, that they've had for a couple years now, because, you know, they had to do schoolwork on it, or they had to do meetings on it, you know?
Yeah. And I think about it, though, too, especially like in the world of availability for things right now, especially like getting your hands on, you know, a laptop at Walmart, for example. I hate making that suggestion, but such is life. You know, it's like, for people, that's going to be one place you go for a lot of your electronics. And if Walmart is right there and you can get a laptop cheap for, you know, $200, and that's going to be able to take care of one problem itself, though, well, you know, okay, cool. That's done. That's taken care of. That's nice and easy. But you actually alluded to kind of the next big thing that shows about merging the consoles and PCs together, is talking about Game Pass, that you can access this library of games that are available, you know, through Microsoft. They may not necessarily have been developed by Microsoft, but they're made for their platform. And you can download those, as long as you're a member of Game Pass Ultimate, not only to your console, but to your PC. Or if they have a game streaming version, you can play that on the go on your phone, though, too. And now you're bridging these divides even more. Of course, it's in the sense for games anyway, but now you're starting to kind of leverage that ecosystem that you've been fostering and developing now for so long. Again, because, like you even said, that it's easier for Microsoft, for Xbox games to actually make their way to PC than it is for a like a classic PlayStation 3 game to make its way to PC without a whole system rewrite, without a whole underlying engine, you know, code base rewrite there to make it actually work. That bridge is already happening right now. And that's one of those things that, again, going back to the parent that, say, you know, buys a $200 laptop from Walmart. Okay, well, the laptop has, you know, a couple USB Type-A ports. Okay, maybe it has Bluetooth instead. Now you could buy that $200 computer and go and get a $60 Xbox controller if you want a first-party one, or go buy one of the Power-A controllers for $20, and your kid can plug in. And as long as you're paying for Game Pass Ultimate, you can access those games, but then do game streaming and be able to play those same AAA titles without making an investment into a $500 console. You know, that, right. That's the other side of it, though, too, is that it still bridges the gap, though, in the sense that you don't even have to have a console. And you're telling me that when Halo Infinite drops, I'm going to be able to play that day one by streaming it, and I don't even have to have an Xbox in my home. You know, that's another one of those propositions, and that's another part of bridging the divide between these, is that we're seeing that gap narrow so much more that the only difference we're really seeing between a console and a PC are exclusive titles. And even that is narrowing further, especially with Halo Master Chief Collection finally making its way to PC, with the Gears Collection being on PC. You know, those are just to name a few. But even so, it's still there. It's still narrowing down even further. It doesn't mean that we're going to see console exclusives going away, but a lot of developers are starting to see that, hey, by including this part of it, we're getting the added value of hitting a market that we didn't even expect to hit in the first place.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe and I think I was thinking of something. It was an unforeseen consequence that just by this advent, all of a sudden, the more you want to pay depends on the you're going to be able to play the game regardless, maybe at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. The more you want to pay on the hardware that you're playing it on depends on the quality, depends on your experience. That's all it's going to come down to now, is they're making the computer available, or, you know, the game available to anyone that has the computer. Not even I shouldn't even say the computer. It should be any computer, even if that computer is your phone.
Yeah, and I think that's
because the electronics are getting so close together now.
Yeah, and I think that's really where you're going to start to see kind of like where things are going to at least be stalled for the short term. And that, I think, is going to be the biggest issue, is that with a video game console, you were getting this all-in-one package that you can pull out of the box, plug in, sign into, and you can immediately hop in and start playing games, you know, with somewhat relative ease.
Depending,
of course, on, you know, day one patches, depending on your internet speed, on how long it takes to actually download games, though, too, you know, or, of course, whatever else you have in your library, because going back to the Xbox anyway, is the backwards compatibility for those older games is pretty much still there. You know, that you could actually slap in a classic Xbox 360 disc and be on your way with it, because the emulation is there to support it. Now, that's, again, where I think we're going to start to see things really stall, is, and it's going to be what holds up the divide, or the actual merging of these two environments more, is the tailored experience, is the quality. Mm-hmm. And because you have so many different variables, like your PC right now is running a Ryzen 9 5900X with an RTX 3090. That's correct, right?
Right.
32 gigs of RAM. You've got plenty of storage 64. Space. Yeah, exactly. I'm currently running a Ryzen 7 2700X with 32 gigs of RAM and a Sapphire Pulse Radeon RX 5700 XT. Okay. Both very different computers, especially in the sense of raw power, connectivity, everything that goes into them. And so that's just us. But the number of PC gamers that are out there right now, who maybe are like dual gamers in the sense of console and PC, they're going to be in the exact same position, though, that no two PCs are the exact same. Even if you build them out into the same specs whatsoever, though, because they are individual components in that sense, that like my you know, you're talking about like the things that got that get brought up online, like when Gamers Nexus or Jay's Two Cents talk about it, is like, you know, the Silicon Lottery. You're running into that same problem, though, but now you're talking about separate components instead of everything that's already connected onto a board that's kind of built all in one. And that's where your mileage very is going to vary, so. That I could build a second one of these and put them side by side, and they may run completely differently. Like, I may get like 5 frames per second more in this game playing here on my PC than I would on the exact duplicate, or, you know, the other way around. That's where it's
They're all going to have their subtle nuances.
Exactly.
And make every, them their own thing.
Yeah, and every console is going to be that way, though, too. But it's a more refined package where you're just kind of cut and paste as you go along. You don't have all these other real, like, major variables to think about when it comes to it. You don't have somebody going and reslotting in a GPU on an Xbox Series X. You know, you're not doing that. So that's where exactly the divide is going to be at, is in the actual quality of things there. And we could even use me as an example. More recently. So you and I have been working through the we've been working through the Halo Reach campaign just for the hell of it. And the problem I run into is that I run into an audio static issue where when I play, I have this weird audio delay, audio popping that I have not been able to address. And there's a lot of complaints about it on the internet since Halo Reach dropped, I believe either a year ago or 2 years ago. You, on the other hand, are not experiencing that issue, right? Exactly. See, that is just one example. And the same thing goes for that could potentially go for me, though, too, is when I was playing Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice on my PC last year, and I ran into some frame rate issues, some graphical things there, even though what's in reality inside my PC is the exact same stuff that you could consider almost being in the Xbox Series X console that I have here in my house right now. But it still had problems with running the way it was supposed to. And I was still able to play the game. I was still able to beat it, but not without its problems. And I relate that directly to being a PC issue. So until you start to see the refinements in the way games are built and how they are like tuned to be able to meet the needs of these separate environments, you're not going to see that full merging of everything yet. And maybe with Microsoft's approach to DirectX in Windows 11, maybe changes to the way NVIDIA and AMD handle drivers going forward for their GPUs, maybe it ends up being a silicon change in the actual consoles themselves. Who knows? But that's going to be the final nail in the coffin that really, I think, brings them together. I mean, I like, do you agree with that, or do you think something different?
Maybe. I mean, maybe with where consoles are evolving, maybe it could cause, you know, the whole Silicon Lottery to be tighter. You know, maybe it could cause an influx in the market for, you know, people to not have so much oversight, you know, or, you know, with those type of things, though, it is sometimes just hard. It's more difficult. When you produce a chip, sometimes there's a chunk of the chip that doesn't work, but you don't expect the entire chip to work. And that's the magic of chips, you know. But when you're working with like the consoles, those chips have to be pretty exact all the time. Maybe we can see that start to happen with computers and stuff. Obviously not now, because, you know, the chip shortage, you know, we're not going to see an end to that.
Absolutely.
Possibly until 2024 at this point.
Well,
but
yeah, potentially.
You know, when we do eventually see it, I mean, maybe we can hope to see that type of oversight go away. So when you do build a computer, if you built the computer that I built, maybe they're going to be the same computer, because, you know, they've got to operate on that same level that home console operates at, because they're just capable of doing that much anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the Intel Nooks anymore too, that they've got a slotted graphics card in them. They're not much bigger than an Xbox Series X if you laid it down flat.
That's very,
you know,
true.
And ran it long. That's true.
That's
just how they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're full computers.
They are.
I mean, they run Windows Pro. You log in, you can do everything, mm-hmm. Word included. So, and I think, yeah, we're not there yet, but we're getting awful dang close. And I think we're still going to see the evolution, and it's getting to the point where the PC market is going to, I think, also make a shift because of it.
Most likely. Most likely. So we'll end here with this then. Do you see this potential evolution happening within this existing console generation now, whether it's with the refresh of, say, the Xbox Series X or a pro version of the PlayStation 5? You know, do you see that happening in this generation, or do you still see us several years off where the next generation of consoles ends up being that final nail in the coffin and merging these two sides of the space together?
I see this generation is as the first real hard strike of the hammer. The next console generation will be the nail in the coffin for this one, where we will have to make that shift, where the whole market will change. And I think home electronics for consoles and for PC are going to be blurred so bad that the whole market's just going to be topsy-turvy, and it's going to change drastically.
And I agree with that one, too. I think we're seeing it happening right now, but as we see the evolution,
specifically with this generation, it's the chip shortage and the timing that it's not going to happen until the next.
Yep. Yep. And that's why it's like I was saying there, is that I think that we're starting to really see that evolution, and the emphasis on it, especially with Windows 11 coming up, is probably what's going to be the next big driving force forward. So I'm right there with you that I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of it here going into hardware refreshes. But obviously the next generation is going to be probably where we see everything really come together even more so than we are now.
Absolutely.
So that is it then. That is it for this week's NPCs Discuss. Of course, if you are a member of the video game industry, whether you're working in video game sales, development, marketing, anything like that whatsoever, and you'd like to join us for an episode in the future, be sure to drop us a line there, whether it's through our email, the npcs.business@gmail.com, or on our Facebook or Twitter. Just let us know there, of course, and we'll reach out to you when we hit a topic that might relate directly to something you're doing. Of course, with that, one of the big things for us, of course, is our podcast itself. Not only the NPCs Discuss, but we're also talking about What Are You Playing? That usually comes up every Tuesday, of course, so please make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform of choice so you can catch not only this episode, but that episode as well in your favorite platform when it goes live. Of course, with that, you can catch us on social media, Facebook and Twitter at the NPCs Podcast. You can also catch us over on YouTube as well at the NPCs Podcast too. We've started up a new series posting new videos every Tuesday and Thursday called the NPCs Quick Save, which is a quick 5-minute recap of the video game headlines that you need to know about. So go check those videos out. Let us know what you think in the comment section below. And of course, thank you everybody for joining us for this episode. We will catch you all in the next one.
Bye-bye.